Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of MixerG, where I do interviews with entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. And I'm the kind of interviewer who comes in even when he has a cold. So screw that. I know that makes for a little bit weirder voice, but I don't believe in staying home, staying in bed. If there's any way for me to get out of bed, I will be the 90-year-old guy who crawls into the office and still shows up for meetings even when he's sick and has a cold. Even if I break a hip, I will be there. It's important to love your work. Am I right, Michael?
Yep, that's right.
Hell yeah. All right, so guys, imagine this. Imagine you've got no money, but you want to start a company. How would you do it? Well, Michael, whose voice you just heard, is he's a guy who was in that situation, and he decided that he was going to start with nothing but a Craigslist ad. An ad on Craigslist. And thankfully, that took off. And what we're about to hear is how he did it. His name is Michael Giorgio. He is the founder of Imaginovation. Let me say that again. It actually works better, don't you think, Michael, when I say it fast? Imaginovation?
Yeah, sounds pretty cool.
It's like a merging of the word imagination and innovation, right?
Yeah, sir. That's right.
Imaginovation. They build enterprise-level web and mobile applications. And before the interview started, Michael wanted me to make sure to tell everybody that they also do software for Internet of Things and AI. I don't know specifically what he means by AI, but I used to laugh at Internet of Things, Michael. Now I want it everywhere. I want my coffee maker to work on Alexa. I want to wake up and say, Alexa, make it 8 cups today. Or... hey, Siri, I shouldn't say that out loud. Well, no, Alexa actually is probably going to make people's speakers go off. Hey, Siri doesn't. Or say, hey, Siri, heat up some water. Today I feel like hot tea. And then get to the kitchen. By the time I'm in the kitchen, I want the hot water ready. I don't know if that's what you're working on, but I've got to tell you, I'm now a huge, like, I don't know if I could say a fan of because it's not fully here, but a huge anticipator of Internet of Things. I will not be making fun of it. All right.
Yeah, it is booming. And AI, you could just, I mean, it's basically artificial intelligence. So
yeah,
we're
it's
building
a broad category that I'm curious. And at some point we'll ask you why you want to bring up AI. I know that that's probably the future for you, but me saying you also work on AI, I don't know if that's going to be clear enough for people about how they could work with you. But we'll talk about that. We'll use this like intro conversation as an opportunity to bring it up. I should also say that two sponsors that we have for here are Active Campaign, the company that will help you send out the smart email, and TopTal, the company that will help you hire your next great developer, designer, MBA, etc. All right, Michael, good to have you here.
Thanks. Great to be here. Really appreciate the opportunity.
Let's start dollars and cents to give people a sense of how big the business is. Your revenue over the last 12 months is what?
Over the last 12 months has been over $1 million. Last year was the first year, 2016 was the first year we broke seven figures.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yep. Yeah, thank you.
Why are you telling me this? I understand when a company comes back or when a founder comes back and his company sold and he tells me, or if it's a funded company and their numbers are public. Why are you? What's the point for you of coming in here and saying you did a little over $1 million?
Just to kind of, you know, not really I'm definitely not the person to ever brag. You know, seven figures really isn't that much money, to be honest, for a company of, you know, we have about 40 people now. But it just kind of comes to show that we, you know, we started from nothing and we grew our company organically into over $1 million company. So just, you know, be a little bit of an inspiration that anything is possible if you work hard and you dedicate yourself and what you believe in.
40 people. You told our producer they're 40 full-time people. That's like an average of, assuming all the money goes to them, that's an average of like $25,000 a year. We must be talking about people who, that's their salary is what I mean. We must be talking about people in a different country where 25 would go a long way. The bulk of your staff is where?
I would say 60% of our staff is in India. So we have a really cool offshore model. A lot of our experienced developers are in India. That's really how we started. But, you know, then after we've made some money, we've been able to reinvest in our company. And then now we're hiring a lot of project managers here, technical leads here, designers, some of our internal marketing staff and business development people as well. So, you know, I would say the core of our, you know, our entire management team is in the U.S. is actually in Raleigh, North Carolina. And then, you know, over about 25 full-time developers in India. So yeah, to be honest, yes, it's a mixture of both. But a core of that money that we've made gets reinvested into a lot of our people here. We're trying to give back to the community. So
by the way, I don't know if you've heard this, but there's like this boop noise going off on my other computer. I would ordinarily, I mean, I know most people would edit that kind of stuff out of their interviews. I like the little office sounds. It's a little unprofessional for me to have left my computer unmuted. But for the most part, I don't have any alerts on my computer, which is why over the years, you don't hear a lot of sounds. I just switched to Basecamp for team project management from like all the more modern, newer project management apps. I just didn't like them. They were all very distracting. Basecamp is just simple. It's all contained. It works really well. It creates a sense of community. But I have to remember, suddenly I want notifications on my desktop, and notifications on a Mac means noise. And so I've got to figure out a solution for that.
No worries.
What do you guys use for project management and staying in touch with people remotely?
We use Jira. So we use our communication tools that constitute of Slack. We use Slack internally for daily communication, and Jira to manage all of our tasks.
That's what I'm noticing for developer teams. It's mostly Jira. They love Jira.
Mostly Jira.
And when they don't use Jira, it's like Trello and then Slack. And don't you feel overwhelmed with all the Slack messages going back and forth?
Oh, man, you don't even know. just imagine for us, we have a 24-hour cycle, right? You know, we have people here and we have full-time people in India. So my phone is – I'm getting notifications in the morning, at night. There's people continuously working. So it's a lot of noises. I have to kind of turn off my phone at night. Not turn it off, maybe just put it on vibrate. I can't have the sounds on. I'll go crazy.
If you don't want to work at night, they'll even have a do not disturb in Slack. But even if you turn off all those alerts, you still are waking up to a lot of catch-up conversation. It's kind of like walking in a room, and instead of just continuing, you have to pay attention to what people said an hour ago, and they have to catch you. It's a distraction, I find. So I'm finding there's a backlash against Slack, and when we internally had to have some communication device, I said, I can't deal with that. I can't deal with email. I don't think it's actually productive. Mm-hmm. We ended up with Basecamp just for that reason. Gives me a little bit of chat, but not a lot of chatter. I don't want distractions.
We used to use Basecamp, but then we migrated over to Jira once our team expanded.
I get it. I feel like at some point you really just can't stick with Basecamp. It becomes a bit of an issue. I also feel like it's weird with Basecamp that when I want to edit a task, I have to hit the edit button and then I have to hit the save button, you know? Those little extra steps, they're not a problem. I'm not like rushing out the door and can't hit two extra buttons. They just feel like it's not using newer technology. But it's worth it. I'd much rather have that and have the sanity. I don't want noise. I don't want people chatting all day long. I mean, chat all day long, but exclude me. Yeah, and I know as soon as I say this, there are going to be people who are sitting back going, no, you don't understand. You could set up alerts just to come up whenever someone mentions your name. And it's a whole other thing. Right? You're managing Slack now. I predict a backlash is coming for Slack.
Probably.
Right. I think so.
Yeah, probably.
All right. Let's go back in time. You're a guy who was in Australia studying for your master's. You left. You were unemployed for a few months, right? Your brother-in-law started a company. What was the company that he started?
Well, actually, we started it together. So what happened was I did my master's degree in Australia, finished in 2011. I came back and I was unemployed for about almost 6 months, I would say. And then he came to me and he basically said, you know, he married my sister and, we had a really good relationship. And, you know, he had this idea of starting an agency. You know, he's more technical. He was working at SAS at that time. He was more on the technical side and he knew I was more on the creative side. So he wanted to partner up with me to manage our sales and marketing operations as we expanded. So we decided to be 50-50 partners and we decided to start Imaginovation. You know, I came up with it. I actually had this dream. We were kind of coming up with like logos and names, and I had this vision in my dream that, you know, imagination, innovation, I just had all these keywords popping up and I remember this and it was crazy. And I just thought, wow, you know, Imaginovation, which is imagination turns to innovation. So we have Imagination is the creative side of our company and Innovation is more of the technical, you know, innovative side of our company. So merged together, that's how we came up with the name. And That's kind of how we started.
I did something similar. It's called a portmanteau, right? Where you take two words, you mm-hmm. smush them together, you end up with a third word, right? Mixergy yeah. was supposed to be a combination of mixers, which is what I was doing, and synergy or energy. Boom, you get it together. The weird part about that is that people always unbundle them in whatever way they want, right? So for me, mm-hmm. I end up with mixed energy, right, Andrew? And people will say I'm a huge fan of mixed energy. And I'll listen to them for a while. They actually have heard a bunch of interviews, and they still call it mixed energy. Do you have a similar issue going on with Imaginovation?
Not really. I mean, not really. I mean, there are a lot of people, they mix and match their words and everything, but for us, it just kind of, I don't know. I just, like I said, I just kind of felt it was right. You know, I felt it was the right name with both words kind of combined. And I think what happened was it was the purpose behind what we believed in. You know, we wanted to mix it wasn't necessarily the words. We had some other cool names to call our company, but it was more alongside the purpose of just like the creativity, the imagination side of the company, that, you know, what we felt is going to provide a lot of imagination in our products and our ideas, and then merging that with the innovative side, the technical side of the business.
What I like about it is it gives you a lot of flexibility. You guys started out mm-hmm. doing WordPress, and you grow into Internet of Things. If you guys were called mm-hmm. WordPress Ovation or WordPress Dev Shop, right, you'd be stuck. I really feel that company names need to give you freedom to do anything. You should be able to go from software to underwear sales with the same name and not have it change. Not because you should, as a business owner, get into yep. underwear sales after starting out with software, but because the name should give you flexibility to adjust what you do. But like the motto should be, or the description should be, super specific and mm-hmm. concrete. We do X, Y, and Z, and that's it, right? Because then people understand what you do, but you get the flexibility to change what you do as you continue. Did you know from the beginning that what you would do is WordPress development, or were you hunting around for something to do?
Well, you know, when we first started, and this kind of goes back to why we have people in India, is we had some developers that Pete had known, he worked with previous companies, and they were also unemployed at that time. And they were website developers along with app developers, not mobile, just more like web applications. So we were doing more websites, and we got into websites and web apps when we first started the company. And the first customer that we signed, the third week that we started, was a web application. It was a music application, very similar to Spotify. It's not Spotify, but it was kind of had similar features, and they were located in Charlotte. And yeah, that's kind of how we started. You know, it's more on the software side of things.
I see. So SaaS was in the company structure from the beginning. SaaS
yes,
developer. But yep, is either correct. Of you a developer yourselves?
I'm sorry?
Are you a developer?
I am not. Nope. So I'm purely just a creative. More creative marketing, business development, sales.
Your brother-in-law,
developer? Brother-in-law, Pete Pranzo, is very technical. I mean, the guy is a genius. He's very, very smart.
He was going to manage these people. Yes, they were cheaper, but with his direction, they could do what he needed done. And
correct.
He could make someone who's not charging that much, doesn't have a lot of experience, fill mm-hmm. in the gaps that he needs. Got it. Okay, so that was
exactly
it.
Exactly right.
So then you guys go yep. and place a Craigslist ad, right?
Yep, yep.
Tell me
so
about that Craigslist ad. What was in there?
So as a startup, right, you have no money. We had – I mean, I was unemployed, man. Like I was working in my parents' spare bedroom, you know, and we basically had – you know, like I said, we started with no money, had, you know, had no loans, no investors, nothing. And we decided what can we do for free. At that time, Craigslist was doing pretty well. Everyone was selling and buying from Craigslist. So we said, you know, let's start promoting on Craigslist. So I put ads like all over the country. I was spamming Craigslist, man. Like I was going nuts on it. I was like, I think we even got, you know, there's even a few times we got some emails from Craigslist even saying, hey guys, you're putting too many ads up. You're going to kind of cease and desist, all this stuff.
Did you stop?
We found other ways.
Yes.
So we changed email addresses. We adapted. We did nothing illegal, but we, you know, we just found ways to kind of get around it. We made no excuses and worked hard and consistently put out ads.
What did you do to get past their blocks?
I think a lot of it was just email addresses, man. A lot of it was just email addresses.
I think today it's a little bit harder, but
probably
because I think they even connected to phones and they've gotten smarter about this stuff because there's so mm-hmm. many people doing it. So you just created a bunch of email addresses. You manually went into the different cities and posted?
Yes.
I see.
Yep. I spent months and months doing it. But the first, you know, we started local first. You know, I'm not going to go post in California when we're located in Raleigh. So said local, you're going to win a local customer first before anybody else. So we started posting in Raleigh and Charlotte. And then we got some calls, started getting some calls in our, you know, around North Carolina. And then the company, the startup in Charlotte called me and we had a few phone calls and we closed the deal. The third, it was, I think it was like around a $10,000 deal. The second week or third week we started the company.
Okay. So, and you were telling me a little bit about what that first job was. It was software as a service, a web app of some kind, right? You outsource it to the developers, you know, in India. Did they, in your opinion, did they do a good job the first time out?
No, they did not.
Yeah, talk to me about that because it's a learning curve.
It is. It's absolutely. It's a huge learning curve, especially when you're dealing with offshore developers. Yeah. There's a lot of communication issues and just – it was a learning curve, not even just – for the guys over there, but even for me and Pete, when we started, we'd never started a business before. You know, we had no idea how to do it. We were just kind of, it was just from all trial and error. A lot of it was from trial and error and fixing and making improvements consistently. And I think that's what business is about. It's about evolving and making continuous improvements, trying not to make the same mistake over and over again. But yeah, to answer your question, they made a lot of mistakes. They were dedicated. They were there for us. They believed in our company, and they, you know, helped pave the way to where we are right now. But at the same time, they were not experienced developers. They had a few years under their belt. I think it was about three or four of them. And it was guys that Pete had known before, he's worked with before. So I was like, all right, cool. This might be some decent developers to work with, but it just kind of, you know, they were good at the simpler kind of designs at that time, but the more complex backend development, it just, there was a lot of issues, and then we had to rectify all those issues with the customer, trying to make the customer happy. And so there's a thousand things that went on, but you know, we're a lot better for today. And over time, just solidify processes and make them as seamless and streamlined as possible.
Have you ever heard of a company called Esri?
I think I've heard of it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the way I felt. Like I heard of it somewhere. I heard of it because a friend of mine worked there. Well, the friend happened to be here yesterday in San Francisco. And on my way out, I said, you know what? I can come by for 15 minutes. One of the nice things about San Francisco, I stopped by 15 minutes and then I went home. He told me the story behind Esri, the company that he worked for. Started out doing consulting services, kind of like what you guys do. Then got into products today, and I had no freaking idea. I'm looking it up right now. The revenue is $1.1 billion. Wow. $1.1 billion. He told me that he was the founder, Jack Dangermond, and his wife, Laura, were on the Forbes 400 list. I looked them up. Their net worth as of August 2017 is $3.7 billion. These two founded the company. Gosh. Shocking, from nothing but consulting. And the reason I bring it up is I get why you, without much money, still living at your parents' house, would start a consulting company, right? You don't need much to start it. And the sky is not necessarily the limit as a consulting company, but you get to keep twisting and changing and adjusting until you figure out what your thing is. And wowee, and look at them. They are on the self-made score, number 8, age 72.
Wow.
Phenomenal, right?
That's pretty amazing.
Do you have that kind of vision for yourself that you guys are going to keep on growing to what level?
I do. I mean, to say that we're going to become a billion-dollar company doing app and mobile development, probably not. There's not many billion-dollar agencies out there.
No.
You have to
pivot away from that, right?
You have to eventually pivot away. We are, you know, we have dabbled into creating some of our own products. We've basically created some internal products. You know, like we've created our internal CRM system, but we weren't able to really finish it because we got consumed by client work. And then we actually created a it's a separate company, but separate product, SaaS product called ImagineCommerce.io. And it's a centralized platform for third party APIs where you can connect with like a Google Analytics or a Facebook Facebook AdWords or Magento or Shopify. And you can view all that KPI data on one centralized location. So you don't have to log in and out of 50 different platforms to view all that data. So we built a platform similar to that, and that was, you know, but we weren't able to finish it. We had some issues with the back end and things like that. So long story short, we've dabbled into our own product development, and eventually we want to create our own suite of products and, you know, have like an imagine.ai, imagine.iot product, imagine. So we want to brand it, make it consistent with Imaginovation under the Imaginovation umbrella, and then kind of create those suite of SaaS products.
Yeah, that is a challenge. How do you find the time to be able to build your own thing? You know what? And frankly, I love the Basecamp people. They started out as 37 Signals, an agency, mm-hmm. and then they wrote about their transition from agency to software like Basecamp. I think that they make it seem too easy. It has been a challenge for lots of entrepreneurs where they will set out on that direction and they just will spend a lot of money to get distracted, hurt their client mm-hmm. base. It's a challenge. And I've done some interviews with entrepreneurs who've talked about how they did it in more depth than the Basecamp team did. It's painful, but it's worth it. And frankly, all you have to do is go talk to Jack Dangermund. He'll tell you. Multi-billionaire. Well, let me take a moment here to talk about my sponsor. It's a company called TopTal. Well, imagine you guys are out there listening to me and you've got an agency like Michael does, but you can't do everything. So you got a client who comes to you and he says, I need to get this done. And you say, you know what? We do that. We don't do this. But I understand as a client, you need both. So for example, maybe Michael, there are agencies that specialize in iOS development, but they've got a client who needs both. We want iOS and Android, or we want iOS, Android. You guys do both of those, but we need now Alexa because all of our clients need to be on Alexa, or one of our clients needs to be on Alexa. Well, you can't go hire an Alexa specialist. You don't want to necessarily get your people to get distracted by this one thing. So what many agencies do is they go to TopTal. They say, hey, TopTal, we have a client. We need somebody who's the best of the best. We're not going to go to the cheapo freelance sites. We want the best of the best for this one client. We can't get invested in this project forever. Bring someone on. And so TopTal will go through their network, understand how you work. Like they'll see, hey, Michael, you guys use Jira. You guys use Slack. We know someone who's really good with who loves Jira, who will tolerate Slack because nobody loves Slack. Actually, there are a bunch of people who love Slack. And actually happens to have all the needs that you're looking for around developing chat applications for Alexa, etc. Right? They make the introduction. You're happy with them. You get to go. This person will then be in your Slack like a full-time employee. This person will get to have an email address at your company like a full-time employee, so that your clients who need to talk to them can communicate with them, and your clients, for all they know, are talking to a full-time person, member of the team. There are many agencies, I had no idea, Michael, that were run this way. You just go and you hire people like that. Or maybe you're into the development stuff, but you need design. So people will go to TopTal and they'll hire design. Or maybe you need pricing help, or you need some financials put together, or you need all kinds of stuff like that. Well, that's what TopTal is about. They'll help you hire the best of the best. They started out with developers, and they've moved on to designers. And today they even have fantastic MBAs that are helping people raise money and organize their financing and figure out what the right pricing should be. So if that is where you are, I want you to go check out a special URL that they created for us, because they are Mixergy fans like you. In fact, the two founders of TopTal are two of the first Mixergy fans. The URL is going to give you 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours, and that is in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks. Think about that. 80 hours free and two-week trial period. Dude, go jump on this right now. The URL is top as in top of your head, tal as in talent.com/Mixergy, toptal.com/Mixergy. And even if you don't sign up, now you know the secret of some of the best agencies out there. They don't have all their people themselves. They work through TopTal. All right. You now have Craigslist ads out there. You're starting to bring in clients. You told our producer, we did a lot of things. We mostly did WordPress stuff. We did mobile development. We did SEO, digital marketing, videos. Mm. Dude, were you like in a position where you said, we'll take on anything? What's going on there?
Oh, yeah. We were that kind of me too agency where, you know, we say turnkey. Everyone always says, hey, I'm this turnkey company. I do everything. We were that type of company where we, you know, we said we could do everything. And that was, like I said, that was trial and error. We were, you know, we had all these different services that we wanted to do because we knew you're going to make money in it. Also, SEO, digital marketing goes hand in hand with development. So we thought it was kind of a good fit. But as we learned, you know, as we grew over time with a lot of experience and trial and error, we decided to just focus on development because we knew that that's our strong suit is building applications and building websites and doing all types of front and back end development. And then we kind of got rid of our, you know, we just kind of deleted our marketing services. It was just, you need a, you know, for when you have a marketing company, you need account managers, you need social media people, you need SEO, you need analytics. There's so many different types of people that you need. And essentially we just did it. It was, we weren't ready at that time to be able to do so many, to have so many different services as such a small company. So
tell me more about the problem with having a lot of different services. To me, it feels like lack of clarity. I don't want someone who does all that and also makes the best coffee on the planet. I want just like great developers when I'm looking for developers. But what's the challenge in having, I see one of your early websites, you emphasized web design and web development. That was the big tagline. What's the challenge with, say, taking both of those on? What's the challenge with taking both of those things on and some digital marketing services? You're saying that you needed to have account managers, but wouldn't you need account managers anyway?
Yeah, you do. Like, you need account managers to manage the accounts for a website, but you also need an account manager to manage, you know, social media or SEO client accounts. There's just a lot of there's so many high expectations that clients have when they're paying you, you know, per month, when they're paying you a retainer for digital marketing to get them up on their Google rankings or to get a certain amount of reach for their social media or whatever it may be, you know, to make a certain amount of money for them over a course of time. So with that being said, those high expectations means that you need to give them a lot of attention, a lot of attention. And in order for us to do that, we had to hire so many people here. They didn't want to deal with, you know, our US accounts didn't want to deal with account managers in India. They wanted to deal with account managers in the US. Right. So we decided to, you know what, this is not worth, this is just, it's digital, you know, even though I love marketing, I mean, I'm a marketer, but I would love to market my own company. As selfish as that sounds, I want to market Imaginovation and help my company grow to be successful and provide value to our, you know, to our app customers, to our, you know, customers that we're developing a web or mobile application or IoT product for. So we just decided to refocus our company last year, and that's, it's been working wonders for us.
Until last year, you were doing how many different services?
We were doing website design, development, mobile applications, web apps, SEO, social media,
SEO
videos.
Up until last year?
Up until January of 2017.
And still you cut back all your services and your revenue for the first time hit $1 million. So you're telling me that cutting back helped lead to more sales, more revenue?
Yes, because it helped us to focus. It helped us to refocus. Focus on what we're really good at, and that's development. That's technology.
And did it help you bring in more clients because of that?
Yes, it did. Because this is the thing, you got to think of it. When you're focusing on so many different services, if you're focusing on 100 different services, you have to, I mean, you got to remember that you have to hire people like account managers or just experienced people to provide those services to your customers, which means you, in order, you know, if your expenses are going to go up, your sales have to go up tremendously. So we decided, you know what, we're going to just reshift our focus on just development and increase our marketing and sales on just development. And it helped us to make more sales and essentially not have to worry about so many different things, you know, to provide customers. And it also, from us speaking to different business mentors that we've had, it makes us a lot, when you're showing a customer that you're focused on maybe 3 or 4 different services instead of 10, it shows that customer that you're super confident in those services that you're offering, like technology. And then also it's easier to sell. You don't, your pitch doesn't have to be 3 minutes long. It could be 20 seconds long.
I see.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, yeah. And my sense is that the way you got into digital marketing was, you tried out Craigslist, it was working for a long time, and then Craigslist lost some of its power. And so you said, yes, we need something else, right? You can't keep spamming Craigslist. And at that point, you, from what I'm understanding, looking at your background, you discovered search engine optimization, SEO, and you said, you know, this is really effective. What was the early set of SEO hits that got you so interested in this that you decided to offer it as a service?
Well, from a lot of our, you know, me and Pete and some of our guys overseas, and then we had a little bit of help here. We did a lot of research and we try to understand what keywords are going to make us the most money, what keywords are actually realistic to hit within a certain time, when kind of like a shorter time frame. And that was Raleigh web design. You know, we're located in Raleigh, so we're focusing on more web design at that time. So over, you know, a lot of we've strategized and that we've basically wrote a lot of content and did a lot of social media and did some on-site optimization and not getting too technical, but I think that we did the right things to get up for those key for, you know, Raleigh web design and development. And then after about 2 years, we started to get ranked on the first page of Google for web design and web development.
Yeah, see, so you're number two for me under Raleigh web design. And were there articles? I don't see a lot of articles on your site about Raleigh, about Charlotte. I don't see any of it. I know you rank for those cities. But well, what did you do in the beginning that got you to rank for them?
Well, what we did is, so SEO is a combination of on-site and off-site optimization. So on-site optimization, like I said before, you have to, you know, do some keyword research, add the correct keywords on your title tags, meta tags, you know, descriptions, content, blogs, and then you combine that with your offsite efforts.
So what did you do offsite that worked for you?
Offsite. Well, what we did is we used to pitch to editors, like Entrepreneur Magazine, Entrepreneur.com, you know, VentureBeat, all these. Well, those we pitch later, but kind of just telling you, you know, all these other, you know, offsite media publications that we used to pitch to, and they would accept our articles, our topics, and they would add a backlink in those articles, and then that increases your Google juice.
For that. So I do see here a story. Yeah, that did come later. I see one on VentureBeat, how digital systems change the way we search. It's written by you. I see. Yep. And those are the kinds of articles that link back to your site that you're talking about.
That's exactly right. Yep. So Google, when the Google spiders the internet once or twice a week, their algorithm is very complex. I mean, I definitely don't know how it works, but from what we understand, what we read about it is that they combine both your on-site efforts and your off-site, but on-site doesn't hold a lot of power, doesn't hold a lot of weight. It's more about 10%, 5 to 10% of your ranking weight. The off-site is really what matters. It's what you're doing for other people. It's the value you're providing to your target audience.
Okay. And so you started doing this personally. You got good at it. It started bringing you customers. You continue with it. You say, let's offer it to our customers. When you offer it to your customers, you need to create a process. What's the process that you created that allowed even guys in India who you never met to be able to do SEO for your clients? What was your system?
What we would do is for SEOs, we would basically, meet with the customer here or with the prospect, and we would try to understand their needs and requirements, see kind of what their goals are, what their objectives are, how much money they want to make. And then from then on, we would develop a digital marketing strategy for them. And then from then on, we would sign the agreement and, charge them a monthly retainer. And then we would start implementing that strategy immediately, and then provide them with weekly or monthly reports to show them the progress of it. But like I said, when we did that, it took so much time and effort from us to do that, that we weren't able to focus on a lot of technology side. And in technology, you know, you're going to make money, doing any type of, you know, software development. So that's what we did. And a lot of our team's strength was technology. So that's why we kind of refocused.
How did you hire people in India? How'd you get, when you got good at it, what was that process like?
So you mean how we started or how we are now? What's our process like
now? Let's do both. I'm curious about what it was like in the beginning, what some of the mistakes were, and then now that it's dialed in, what are you doing differently? So let's go back to the beginning first.
Okay, in the beginning. So in the beginning, Pete knew developers in India, and that's the reason we hired him, because they were also unemployed at that time. So we thought, okay, this is kind of cool. They're willing to work for us for free until I could kind of bring in some business. So not a lot of pressure on me, right? But you know, that's how it is when you're in sales. But we knew them. It was a blessing in disguise, essentially, that we knew these guys overseas that were willing to work free, and then that's kind of how we started. And then they grew their team, so we started to hire those people over there. After we closed more deals here, we started to reinvest in more developers in India and just hire more and more over there. But at that time, they were outsourced. So, you know, they were another company. They were building their company while helping our company grow, you know, while helping us grow as well. So we found a lot of challenges in that, in the sense that they were, even though we were paying them for services to be rendered, like building a website or an application, they were still focused on building their company. So their passion wasn't there. So when you outsource, right, and they're not full time for you, they're just, like I said, their passion, their dedication isn't there, and it causes a lot of issues. So over time, what we used to do is we did outsource. You know, when we were very small, it's just only a few of us here, right? So we outsourced to our team over there, and then over time we made more money, and then we just hired more people in Raleigh, and then we used to hire full time. We used to, you know, let go of our teams in India, and then we would hire full time people over there. So they were under Imaginovation contracts and NDAs. So right now we have over 20 people full time for us, and they work remotely in their homes. It's pretty cool. And they speak English, and they work on US hours. And we also have a recruiting company in India, and we would vet them for us, and they would send them to us to be interviewed. We would interview them, have our process here for interviewing, and then we would hire them full time, or we would not hire them. So it's kind of cool. We've kind of conquered this offshore model. You know what I mean? And it's worked.
Any tips for someone who's listening to us about how to do this right?
I'm sorry?
Any tips for someone who's listening about how to do this right?
If you are trying to work with anyone remotely, make sure that you're able to work from 12 o'clock at night to 6 in the morning.
That you need to do that, even though now your team is working on your hours.
No. When you first start.
Because I see they're not going to work around you until you start to really have work for them, and it takes a long. Yeah, that's painful, man.
It's very painful. We did that for almost 4 years. So it was a lot of grinding. It was working, you know, nights, and we have to, you know, you just got to work hand in hand with these guys, and nothing against them. It's just that you got to work hand in hand with them because there's communication, there's culture barriers, there's a lot of different things, and it's a learning curve. So you gotta be there to manage them. You can't just give them a task and expect them to complete it like this. You know, it doesn't work that way.
When you say be there to manage them, you mean check in with them during the day. How's this task going? You're constantly messaging them.
Consistently. Yep. And build solidified process and internally have internal tools like Jira or like Basecamp. So the communication is very seamless between you and your developers. So over time, we've worked on a lot of things that we had done wrong, and then we've improved and evolved, and now it's working wonderfully. And these guys over there, they're amazing. We don't have to stay up with them all night. We have, you know, we have processes now that work effectively.
Do you do any ongoing training with them?
As in what? What do you mean? Like
training in how your company works, training about how to work with your clients, training on the work that they do specifically. Any?
Yeah, we've experienced in terms of working with our clients, they don't really work. They don't really talk with our customers. We have our account managers and project managers here to work with our customers, just because a lot of U.S. customers want to work with locals. However, in terms of like technical training, process training, things like that, yeah, we go through about 2 to 3 week period where we train them on all our tools. We train them on our company. We train them on processes and things like that. And they, you know, the more you pay them, you know, anyone overseas, the more you're going to pay them, the more experienced they're going to be. And they don't really need to be handheld. You don't have to hold their hand because they're just that good.
Okay. You moved on from Craigslist. You did SEO. Networking was really big for you. What kind of networking did you do?
I used to go to like local events.
Really? So you would go to the local chamber of commerce and get people from there, or you're talking about local meetups?
Both.
Did both. The chamber ever work for you? I'm so surprised by how many guests come in and tell me about the chamber. That seems like a waste. Those people just feel like they want a quickie, cheap website. They don't value the work. And frankly, their vision for themselves is not online. It's offline. They want to be the real estate broker. They have to have a website. Give them a website fast. Don't charge them too much, right?
You're exactly right. So I used to go to meetups, networking events, you know, just trying to see what works, what doesn't work. Remember, I was new to this. I had no idea what I was doing, man. I mean, I was 24 years old at the time when I started to network, 25. So over time, I started to realize that, all right, this crap's not working. you know, a lot of the people we're meeting at Chamber or at these little meetups, like you said, they wanted $300 websites, and we were charging at that time, you know, at least $2,000 to $3,000when we first started. So it just wasn't worth it for us. I put myself out there just to kind of build referrals, you know, build my contacts. You never know. Sometimes you might meet the right person with the right network or the right database, and hey, you might get some business from it. And that would happen. You know, they would know someone who knew someone who knew someone. But to get a customer straight from a Raleigh Chamber event or from a meetup event is very rare. It's better from – that's easier for like a real estate agent, right, or a law firm. But for – you're talking for, you know, something for building products that are thousands of dollars, that, man, it's just – You just gotta go meet people, I think, and just try it, you know?
Yeah.
What worked for us in terms of networking was more like expos and larger networking events.
Right.
So that's where we would reinvest a lot of, you know, me and Pete never really took salaries. You know, we would reinvest a lot of our own salaries for first 4 years back into the company, into a larger, you know, to a big expo here in North Carolina, or sometimes even out of state. And, you know, we would get business that way.
Did Pete have kids or a kid?
Yeah. So,
and Pete still didn't take a salary.
No, but remember, Pete was working two jobs for 4 years. Pete was working at SAS
while he was working on Imaginovation.
Yeah, and then after Imaginovation, he was working from 6 p.m. until 1 in the morning.
Good Lord.
Every day. So the guy was freaking exhausted. Like, I was working 15 hours a day. Pete was working 15, 16 hours a day for 4 years. And then after the fourth year, we got some big deals. And then Pete decided, I'm putting my 2 weeks notice, man. So,
and then he left.
And he left. And no one ever quits SAS. Like, SAS is like one of the best companies in the country to work for. They're an amazing company.
I thought you meant SAS as in software as a service that he has.
No. Sorry. SAS. If you Google them, they're like.
Oh, got it. SAS, yes.
SAS. Yeah. He was in tech support there for 4 years. So he was working there while he, you know, that's when we started Imaginovation, is when he first, when he was working at SAS. Yep. And then I was working during the daytime while he was working at SAS. I was doing a lot of daytime tasks, and Pete would do a lot of other, you know, other project management, other things. He would do thousand other things after hours. And that's kind of, yeah, that's how we grew the company. So it was a lot of hours.
Man, I don't know how you guys didn't get burned out. And
man, you're telling me, man.
And then a tragedy happened. I'm going to talk about it in a moment. I want to give it enough time to have a real conversation. But first, I've got to tell everyone, look, if you're doing any kind of email marketing, don't use those services that let you send the same exact thing to everybody on your list. People don't need the same thing. What you want to do is email them intelligently. First day they sign up, they should get a specific kind of email. Second day, another kind of email. If they buy, send them emails to customers. Don't send them an email saying, hey, guess what? We have a 10% discount or a 20% discount. If they click on the same section of your site, maybe for Michael's site, he's got some people who are clicking only on Internet of Things. He should be aware of that, so that what he does is sends them emails saying, we are the leaders in Internet of Things software development, right? You want to know what people are doing on your site. You want to know what they're interested in. You want to see the actions that they're taking. And based on that, send them a different email, send them a different sequence of messages. Well, doing that has been incredibly complicated. It's possible. It has been possible for a long time, but most companies don't do it because it is so complicated. Well, that's where ActiveCampaign decided they were going to play. They changed their whole business around. They've been in email forever, but they said, you know, there's this new set of tools that people are not getting to take advantage of because it's too complicated. We are going to add those tools and make it so simple that anyone can do marketing automation, that anyone who wants to can send a different email to somebody who clicked one link and versus someone who did not, different email to someone who bought versus someone who not, different email to someone who's tagged as a potential customer versus someone who is not, so that you can actually close sales based on what people are doing on your site and what they're interested in, and what they're doing and clicking and are interested in your email. So simple. I urge you to go check it out. When you play with it, you're going to understand the power that is now at your fingertips. You're going to feel like you've got superpowers as a marketer. The URL that I'm going to ask you to go check out will give me credit, so they know that I referred you and they'll want to keep buying ads. But also, it's going to give you your second month free. It's going to give you a free trial right now. It's going to give you two free one-on-one sessions with their consultant so that they could show you exactly how you can think about this and use it in your business. And if you're already with someone else, they are going to give you free migration. All you have to do is use this special URL. And frankly, if you're a Mixergy listener, you know by now it's not that hard. It's activecampaign.com/Mixergy. Active Campaign. And that's a good name, actually. I don't think they meant for it to be about this, but the business was a whole other thing when they started. Active Campaign. The campaign should be actively changing based on what people do. It's a great name. activecampaign.com/Mixergy. And when you're on that page, I just really will point out one thing that you should look at. If you're looking at it on desktop, on the right side of their page is a workflow, a flow chart that will show you how they think about this and how you should be thinking about marketing. And on the very bottom, you'll see what a contact record looks like when you're looking at them in Active Campaign. Anyway, activecampaign.com/Mixergy. The tragedy was what?
So, you know, like I said, Pete married my sister, right? So they had their first baby. His name was Philip, and he was a preemie. but, you know, he was just so little that he didn't make it after about the first month. Or sorry, actually, it was almost 2 months. I think 7 weeks is wow. Is when he passed. So we had to kind of go through that, and that was I think after the 3.5 year mark in our company, something like that around there. Wow. So
I didn't know. You know what? I guess I kind of assumed once they were born, that's it. You just have to deal with a lot more stuff. Wow. So he was in the hospital for weeks. And then
He was in the hospital for a few months with my sister, and there was just some issues. He wasn't growing, and so we had to kind of deal with that. And you know, that's, you know, but the benefits are that, you know, Pete's my brother, and you know, I'm always there for him, and he's always there for me, and we kind of offer this balance to each other where, you know, we're always there for each other, you know, and it's pretty amazing. It's definitely a blessing. But yeah, it was really hard, man, at that time when Philip passed, and I had to take on a lot of, you know, help Pete out. Pete was in the hospital for a few months, so he couldn't dedicate all of his time to Imagine Ovation. And
so I had to take on more of the work.
I had to take on more of the work.
Thin.
Yep.
You have to talk to developers and tell them what to do, and you're not a developer. So you're smiling, right?
It was crazy, man. But taking nothing away from Pete, when he was in the hospital, he worked too. So it was crazy. Like his son, you know, wasn't doing well, and he was in the hospital, and he still had to work and put in some hours. It was hard, man.
It seems like you guys came out better for as a company, if not like as a parent. That's really painful.
Very hard.
Man, now that I'm a parent, I'm more aware of how many people lose their kids. It just feels like, wow, this is a thing. And people don't talk about it because it makes other people feel uncomfortable.
It was hard, man. It was hard. But
and so you don't want to put like more pressure on him. You seem to have come out better as a relationship, as partners, but also better as a company. What's the bright side of this? What happened that's better because of this?
I think it made us really appreciate that life is short and you don't have much time. You really don't have much time, man. And you got to do something that you love. And regardless of how much money that you're making or regardless of, you know, the position
it's just, all know that and still we don't do it. Now, when you come to the reality of it, you're confronted with it in a very painful way. What do you do? What actions do you take that are different for it? Or do you come away with a lesson and the actions just you're too busy to actually implement?
No, I don't think it's that we're too busy to implement. I think what we took from it really is that I think the outcome of it is that me and Pete's relationship got even stronger. Not that it wasn't strong before, but I think it just took it to a whole new level because he saw what kind of brother I am to him and, you know, who he is to me. And I think it just made our family stronger. And listen, you know, me and Pete started this as a, as a, I mean, we started this together as a family business, right? So we started it together. We're going to end it together. You know, we're 50-50 partners, and that's what we always promised each other. And I told them, like, man, whatever you go through, I'm going to be there for you. And whatever I go through, you're going to be there for me. So it goes a long way with just showing you lessons of how to overcome adversity and trials and tribulations.
But you didn't do anything like, I imagine coming out of that thing saying, you know what? I'm going to work a lot less so that I have more time, or I'm going to work a whole lot more because I don't want to go home and think about this. But either way, there's like a whole other way of working that comes from that. And it sounds like that's not what happened with you. There was a creator bond, but there wasn't a, we're shedding this because of this experience, or we're structuring this, or we're going to go and be more assertive with our clients because of this experience. I'm looking maybe for something that's not there.
Yeah, well, actually, what it made us do is it didn't make us work from 15 hours to 8 hours a day. We're not at that level yet. we still put in a lot of hours per day. But what it made us do is work smarter. It's not always about –
So tell me how. Let me benefit from your experience. When you say work smarter, what do you do that I could take away from?
Work smarter as in as easy as just – documenting things, writing things down.
How do you document? What's your document? Give me an example of something you document.
Okay, so what we document is we'll make a process, like for me in sales, right? So what I made last year was I would write down a process of how to vet leads. So when a lead calls us, what questions do you ask to vet them so they don't waste your time? You know, you can waste a lot of time, sending a proposal to a customer and they're never going to work with you. Right. They don't have the money. They don't have the budget. So I'll write down these processes because we know that we're going to hire new salespeople, and I can send them this documentation, and they'll read it and they'll follow it, and boom, that will save me 3 weeks, 4 weeks of training. See what I'm saying? So that saves me time.
And that's in a Google Doc.
It'll be in – well, we use – so Jira is a combination of – so Jira is owned by Atlassian. Mm-hmm. So Atlassian has Jira, Confluence, HipChat, has all these different tools. So we use Jira and Confluence. Jira is our communication platform between us and our customers and us internally. And then it's also it gives us Confluence. Confluence is a document management system. So we'll have different processes that will upload documents that will upload to Confluence, and we can share that with our customers, or we can share that with our employees internally. It's pretty cool.
I see. Yep. So
you see what I'm saying? So we have everything organized.
Atlassian.com/software/Confluence. I see what
Confluence.
They do.
And it's pretty amazing. It's pretty cool. So
what does it give you that Google Docs wouldn't give you for documenting things like this?
It just allows you to share it. So when you're in Jira, okay. So if you just get
and Jira is project management. It's like a big task app for bigger projects. Okay.
Yes. Okay. So Jira is Confluence is a little bit useless without Jira. So they both go hand in hand. So that's the reason it's better than Google Docs. We use Google Docs for some things, but most of our documentation is going to be in, at least now, it's going to be in Confluence because you can share the doc with an employee that's in Jira. So it's all in a centralized location.
I see.
You see what I'm saying? So yes. You don't have to use, Google Docs, it doesn't integrate with Jira, but Confluence
does. And then
you get
one search all of Jira, search all of Confluence, one place. Yep. That makes sense.
You can link them, you can share them, you can email them. There's so many things you can do. So it's really good internally.
And Jira. HipChat, by the way, same company.
I don't know how HipChat is now, but HipChat, when we used it about 4 months ago, I believe we used it for like a month or two. We went from Slack to HipChat back to Slack. So Slack was awesome, but then we saw HipChat is an Atlassian tool.
Right, integrated and you're using other tools anyway.
Exactly. So it's all kind of centralized. But HipChat had a lot of bugs. I think Atlassian's still fixing some things in that system. Yeah, but it might be different now. I'm never going to take anything. Atlassian's awesome, man. Like it's an amazing company. Amazing suite of products, and they all work. They all work in tandem.
I didn't realize they were still buggy. I thought they were good, but the knock against them was they didn't have as much integration and they weren't fun.
Even Facebook has bugs. So there was like, even Facebook sometimes I'll have bugs with my Messenger.
I know. I can't believe that Facebook even has bugs, and they definitely do. And they had a Facebook Messenger app up until recently that I liked using a lot. But man, if I mentioned a name at all, it would bring up all the names in my contacts and would just stop typing until I picked the name.
Yeah.
It's somehow heartening sometimes when the bigger guys have bugs, because you feel like, all right, well, they make mistakes too. So it's, I'm not going to beat myself up too much. But on the other hand, it feels like, well, maybe I'm never going to get to a solid piece of software if these guys are still dealing with bugs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. But yeah, I mean, Slack worked better for us. You know, like we went from Slack to HipChat to Slack, and Slack, actually, this is how awesome our team is that, you know, they found Slack has like different APIs and different integrations with Jira. So we've kind of connected both Slack with Jira. So
the one thing you don't get is a really good search. I still think that we need one universal search. I hate that that people still come to me because they want to know where something is. And I don't blame them. It's faster to come to me than to go search our Google Drive and search our chat and so on, right? One of the reasons I wanted Basecamp was I wanted one unified place, so there's one place to search. What I realize is even Basecamp, they have one find, and they do chat, documents, the whole thing. You still have to say, I want to search through images or files or search through private com. I don't want to just search and then find it wherever. Just the whole point is we should have one universal search box that searches everything. We still don't have that. As a people, I feel we've let ourselves down. And frankly, there have been companies that have been funded to do that. I don't trust them because I don't like God view. All these companies have God view where they can go in and look at what everyone says. I do these Mixergy interviews. A lot of the developers and founders of big companies are fans of mine. I got to believe that some of them are going through my personal documents saying, hey, look, Andrew's checking out our stuff. Let's go see what Andrew's doing. And then they're going deep into my stuff. I don't like that. The one company.
Probably.
Would you do that?
Yeah. Probably.
And you know what? Here's the thing.
They probably are.
You do need to go in and see what your users are doing to understand if their software is being used right. But I think that God view is a real issue. I remember when Travis had some issues at Uber, it was Mark Suster, the venture capitalist, who said, look, a lot of stuff they're doing, other people do, but here's a big problem that we're not talking enough about. God view. He says he goes in and sees what some of these startups have access to and how they look through people's stuff, and it's just wrong.
Yeah.
It's one thing to look to understand how your software is being used. It's another thing to just kind of pry because you can. All right.
Yeah,
we'll close it out with this. At the top of the interview, we talked a little bit about Internet of Things and artificial intelligence. Internet of Things for you guys means what? It doesn't mean making my coffee. We're still not in a world where my coffee could be made remotely. But what does it mean?
So Internet of Things, so a customer will come to us and they'll have a certain piece of hardware and they want software to connect with that hardware.
Give me a specific. What's a company that came to you and did what?
So it's kind of hard to say because we have confidentiality agreements with some of the companies that we did IoT, but I could say an enterprise level company that came to us and they had this lighting product. So that's a physical piece, you know, physical piece of hardware. And they asked us to do a front end design that integrated with their lighting product. So when we created this design, the software, I can't give too much info, but basically you'd press enter or whatever it is and the light would go on. That's just an example. It's not really what we did, but that's an example of things that we have done, before, you know. So you connect a piece of hardware with a piece of software because hardware by itself is useless these days. It needs to connect to Wi-Fi. It needs to connect to the internet. It needs to connect with software that does something because everyone's on the internet now.
Of course. I see. Okay, they'll have hardware and they come to you. Is it largely bigger companies or is it people who are going to Kickstarter that you guys are aiming at?
Great question. So it really just depends, but we're getting – okay, so the new thing right now in the U.S., actually all over the world, is becoming an entrepreneur. Everyone wants to start a company. Everyone wants to start a business. It's booming. Like the entrepreneur keyword is booming. So we get a lot of startups that come to us, but a lot of them don't have the money. They want to go on Kickstarter or they're trying to get a loan or they're trying to get investors. So they'll come to us before they even have the money. So that's why I was going back to, you know, there's a vetting process. You got to make sure that these guys have the budget because we have to get paid for our work. You know, we're not, unfortunately, a nonprofit. You know, but we do give back, but not in that way, you know. So
then what about AI? What are you guys doing in AI?
Well, with AI, we're dabbling into artificial intelligence applications. So it's not something that we've, you know, we've we have experience in creating, but we're starting to research, investigate artificial intelligence, and we're going to start offering it as a service in the next few months. So it's nothing that I can say, oh, we've implemented this project. It's just something that we're going to start getting into. But IoT, we've already created a few different projects. We've already worked on a few different projects along with mobile and web applications, and videos. So what makes us very different is we'll create a custom video for the app that we've built. Because when you download an app from the Apple Store, you don't really know what the app does. You don't know the process of that app. You don't really know, okay, this app looks awesome, but I have no idea what it does. So we'll create a video after we've developed an application, and it'll sit on top of the app. So it'll be like a walkthrough or explainer or storytelling video in 4K or an animation. And it'll guide the target audience for that app of what that app does. So that makes us very different than most software companies, because we're one of the only U.S. software companies that has a video team. We have internal videographers and animators.
You know what? I was going to close this interview out by telling people to go check out imaginovation.com. You don't have it.
.net.
.net. Imaginovation.net. There's a guy .net. Named Guy in Canada who has that site. There's nothing up on the site. He got it back in 1999 before you. You guys got your first registration in 2011.
Mm-hmm. That's when we started. After,
even though you didn't have the .com, you ended up going for the same business name.
Yeah, I think we actually emailed that guy. There's some people that just own domain names and they sell them, but sometimes they forget about them. Like, I don't even know if that guy's still alive.
I don't know what he's up to. You know what I mean? Like, because the site is down, I can tell you he's alive. As far as I could tell, he's alive. Okay. He's a managing director at Directeur General. He is French-Canadian. And I translated his LinkedIn profile to try to understand what he does at Imaginovation Inc. So we actually had the name. I thought maybe he'd be a squatter because the .com is gone. I think you should try emailing him in French.
Yeah.
He does market analysis, business plan writing, investor meetings, planning, and startups. He does consulting, BGC Inc., consulting firm, just goes on. So that's what he does at this company.
Interesting. Yeah, sucks, maybe we'll shoot him an email.
Doesn't it?
Yeah. We're still used to .net, but yeah, I would love .com too.
And you know what?
It'd be kind of cool.
When is this thing expiration date? It expired. He did not pay, as far as I could tell, for his domain. GoDaddy's still holding it. I would do a GoDaddy ping thing. Don't worry, this interview won't go up in time. What are they called? GoDaddy has a service where, and I've done this, I end up with domains like that, where you say, as soon as this thing's available, give it to me, and they will do that. I wouldn't say that. I mean, if the guy was doing something on the business, that makes sense, but he's not. Let me take a look. Let me update it one more time, actually. Do you know the site whois.com? So freaking good.
No.
I just search it using the URL. So whois.com, Imaginovation. Let me see. Yeah, he has, as far as I could tell, an expired domain. He should have paid his bill. It would have. It looks like the No, I take it back. He did. Expires December of this year, December 3rd of this year. So every year it seems like he pays the bill. Maybe you could contact him before his expiration. I see.
Yeah.
I
have to
hit refresh on
We can
on
maybe buy that. We can buy that from him and redirect our
.com. He's not doing anything with it. And he understands about business. Go in and talk to him about how, like, but you need to talk to him very French. His whole thing is French. And he's a successful enough guy that he's not using this. He doesn't need to be vindictive. I think you've got a really good person there to work this through with.
I'm a U.S. and a Canadian citizen, and I cannot even speak French. I lived in Canada for 7 years.
Yeah, it depends on where you live in Canada, right? There's some places where if you don't live there, they give you a hard time. Other places.
I know.
All right. So the website is imaginovation.net, where you can go find out about – actually, you guys have a really nice landing page. So
thank you.
Good video explaining what you guys do. Anyone can go out and check it out. If you want to go check out my two sponsors, the first is the company that will help beef up your development team. If you guys are like Michael and you're listening to this video because you want to understand how he's running his agency, maybe you want to hire somebody else to beef up your staff, go check out Top Talent. Top is on top of your head, talentsandtalent.com/mixerg. And if you want to send out, what do you guys use for email marketing, Michael? Do you guys do it?
Yeah, we use HubSpot for all of our sales.
What do you like about HubSpot for email?
Oh man, HubSpot's awesome. So with HubSpot, it tells you, you know, if they opened your email, it integrates with your, so it gives you analytics and reporting on, you know, whether, so you can basically add like a landing page in your email when you send it to a customer or to a lead. And if they opened up that landing page or that document, it tells you if they opened it or not. It's pretty cool.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? HubSpot, and it gives you analytics on it.
Good point. If anyone has HubSpot, you do not need ActiveCampaign because HubSpot is all about marketing and every aspect of online marketing, right? They give you the website. Mm-hmm. They give you, right? You have to host with them or that's the ideal version. Landing page creation with them, email marketing through them, the whole thing. The downside is it's the whole thing. So if anyone's living in HubSpot world, ActiveCampaign is not for you. If you're not living in HubSpot world, you need email marketing that does the smart stuff that Michael's talking about. And the best way to do it is to go to activecampaign.com/MixerG. activecampaign.com/MixerG. You know what? I really genuinely thought I might pass out in this interview because I'm not feeling very well, but I enjoyed this conversation and it kept me going. So I'm going to go hang up right now and see if I pass out later.
Oh no. I hope you feel better.
I'll do it. Thanks so much for doing this. Bye.
Cool. All right, Andrew. Thanks, man. All right. Bye.